Chapter 36. The Syria of lasted longer than the tempo Felice. She paused, and then went on dreamily. Dollar Masseria, I think those words are alive. Deronda was mute. To question her seemed an unwarrantable freedom. He shrank from appearing to claim the authority of a benefactor, or to treat her with the less reverence, because she was in distress. She went on musingly, I thought it was not wicked. Death and life are one before the eternal. I know our fathers slew their children, and then slew themselves, to keep their souls pure. I meant it so. But now I am commanded to live. I cannot see how I shall live. You will find friends. I will find them for you. She shook her head and said mournfully, not my mother and brother. I cannot find them. You are English? You must be speaking English so perfectly. She did not answer immediately, but looked at Deronda again, straining to see him in the double light. Until now as he had been watching the oar, it seemed as if she were half roused, and wondered which part of her impression was dreaming and which waking. Sorrowful isolation had benumbed her sense of reality, and the power of distinguishing outward and inward was continually slipping away from her. Her look was full of wondering timidity, such as the forsaken one in the desert might have lifted to the angelic vision, before she knew whether his message was in anger or in pity. You want to know if I am English? She said at last, while Deronda was reddening nervously under a gaze which he felt more fully than he saw. I want to know nothing except what you like to tell me, he said, still uneasy in the fear that her mind was wandering. Perhaps it is not good for you to talk. Yes, I will tell you. I am English-born. But I am a Jewess. Deronda was silent, inwardly wondering that he had not said this to himself before, though anyone who had seen delicate-faced Spanish girls might simply have guessed her to be Spanish. Do you despise me for it? She said presently in low tones, which had a sadness that pierced like a cry from a small dumb creature in fear. Why should I? Said Deronda. I am not so foolish. I know many Jews are bad. So are many Christians. But I should not think it fair for you to despise me because of that. My mother and brother were good. But I shall never find them. I am come a long way from abroad. I ran away, but I cannot tell you, I cannot speak of it. I thought I might find my mother again, God would guide me. But then I despaired. This morning when the light came, I felt as if one word kept sounding within me, never, never. But now I begin to think her words were broken by rising sobs. I'm commanded to live. Perhaps we are going to her. With an outburst of weeping, she buried her head on her knees. He hoped that this passionate weeping might relieve her excitement. Meanwhile, he was inwardly picturing in much embarrassment how he should present himself with her in Park Lane, the course which he had at first unreflectingly determined on. No one kinder and more gentle than Lady Malinger, but it was hardly probable that she would be at home, and he had a shuddering sense of a lackey staring at this delicate, sorrowful image of womanhood, of glaring lights and fine staircases, and perhaps chilling suspicious manners from lady's maid and housekeeper, that might scare the mind already in a state of dangerous susceptibility. But to take her to any other shelter than a home already known to him was not to be contemplated. He was full of fears about the issue of the adventure which had brought on him a responsibility all the heavier for the strong and agitating impression this childlike creature had made on him. But another resource came to mind. He could venture to take her to Mrs. Merrick's, to the small house at Chelsea, where he had been often enough since his return from abroad to feel sure that he could appeal there to generous hearts, which had a romantic readiness to believe in innocent need, and to help it. Hans Meyrick was safe away in Italy, and Durando felt the comfort of presenting himself with his charge at a house, where he would be met by a motherly figure of Quakerish neatness, and three girls who hardly knew of any evil closer to them than what lay in history books and dramas, and would at once associate a lovely Jewess with Rebecca in Vanho, besides thinking that everything they did at Deronda's request would be done for their idol, Hans. The vision of the Chelsea home once raised, Deronda no longer hesitated. The rumbling thither in the cab after the stillness of the water seemed long. Happily his charge had been quiet since her fit of weeping, and submitted like a tired child. When they were in the cab, she laid down her hat and tried to rest her head, but the jolting movement would not let it rest. Still she dozed, and her sweet head hung helpless, first on one side, then on the other. They are too good to have any fear about taking her in, thought Deronda. Her person, her voice, her exquisite utterance, were one strong appeal to belief and tenderness. Yet what had been the history which had brought her to this desolation? He was going on a strange errand, to ask shelter for this waif. Then there occurred to him the beautiful story Plutarch somewhere tells of the Delphic women. How when the Menads, outworn with their torch-lit wanderings, lay down to sleep in the marketplace, the matrons came and stood silently round them to keep guard over their slumbers. Then, when they waked, ministered to them tenderly, and saw them safely to their own borders. He could trust the women he was going to for having hearts as good. Deronda felt himself growing older this evening and entering on a new phase in finding a life to which his own had come perhaps as a rescue, but how to make sure that snatching from death was rescue. The moment of finding a fellow creature is often as full of mingled doubt and exultation as the moment of finding an idea. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.